This week, Charlize Theron. And I guess that's really it. Nothing in this movie makes any goddamn sense. This week it's Death by Aeon Flux. The kids don't like it, no, no, no. The kids don't like it, no, they don't like it at all. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Netflix Martyrs. I'm your host, Chris Mattiello. With us, as always, we have Rob Recci.
Hello.
And Dwaneet Mehta.
Howdy.
We're running with three today because, if I'm not mistaken, and you guys maybe can correct me on this, this movie actually killed Pam.
Given her last message, she's either dead or chasing a rhino.
We like to start off every episode with something we call Five Across the Eyes, where we attempt to explain, review, criticize, summarize a movie in five words or less. And this week's movie was Aeon Flux, based on the 1990s MTV anime of the same name, starring Charlize Theron and Johnny Lee Miller.
Well, I guess I'll go with that one. After watching the movie and doing a little research about it, and this is my five words, that it could have been Michelle Rodriguez.
Oh,
I don't know. No. I don't know if that's, you know, a good thing, a bad thing. You can interpret it as you will. It's a trivia warning. You know, as you watch this film and you're getting into it, just every time you see Charlize Theron, just think to yourself, it could have been Michelle Rodriguez, and then maybe go watch Fast and the Furious 6.
Anytime I feel bad about myself, I'm going to start saying that in my life. Could have been
every
Michelle Rodriguez.
Every bad movie you watch, just think to yourself, it could have
been Michelle Rodriguez. You know, it's kind of funny that that's the case, because I hadn't actually heard that. And that makes a lot of sense, given who the director is, because I was reading up on some trivia as well for this movie, and it turns out the director, Karen Kusama's first movie was a short film starring Michelle Rodriguez. And unfortunately, Aeon Flux was not her last film, and she managed to grace us with one more film. And Chris knows this, but Rob, why don't you guess what movie that was?
You gotta give him a time period.
Yeah, man.
Okay, it was 2009, and it involved a killer female lead.
Oh, 2009. Was it, 2009.
The actress in this movie was, like, the number one babe hammer in 2009.
The actress in this movie? Was it a Resident Evil movie?
Nope.
Trying to think of ass-kicking female movies.
I didn't say an action movie. I said she's a killer female lead. This one tripped up Chris, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think you're going to have to go with it.
All right. Jennifer Spotty.
Wow. All right. So
that gives you the pedigree of this director.
Yeah, keep that in mind.
Yeah. Which leads into my five across the eyes. At least not Jennifer Spotty.
Oh, man. We're really bagging on this director already. And it's a shame because I feel like the world could use more directorial voices that are not only female, but a minority as well.
I'll handle, like, directors that are all dudes if the alternative is shitty directors. And look, there's definitely female directors who can do, great movies. The director who did The Hurt Locker.
Catherine Bigelow. Like,
yeah, perfect example.
Yeah.
I struggled to be able to name someone beyond Bigelow.
Yeah.
That's just me personally. But she's the one that comes to mind and, you know, kind of the only one, really. And that's just because of the more recent, I guess, like, Academy praise.
Those Oscars are really just making up for Point Break not winning one.
You shut your mouth.
All right. Anyway, back to Aeon Flux. My five across the eyes is a review of this movie. Very simply, why should I care? God damn it. Because nothing in this movie is really worth caring about, and nothing makes much sense. Well, let's jump right into it. We open the movie with a completely nonsensical scroll of text, which is followed immediately by a nonsensical voiceover. Does anyone know what the backstory of this movie actually is, despite it getting hammered into our head for about 15 minutes?
Yes.
Really? Yeah, I think I got it. I mean,
please share it.
Well, we're in the future, of course. It's rather a utopia dystopia, because we learn that everybody gets a disease of some kind. Everyone's sick in the future, and they move all the humans into like a perfect society surrounded by a wall.
Now, I don't want to interrupt you, but I don't really believe you that you actually know the plot of this and aren't just kind of spitting out any dystopian utopian movie.
Yeah, but this is any utopia dystopia. That's they let you know that that's right away. It's like, you've seen this before, and if you haven't, it's easy to think about. It's not an uncomfortable futuristic. It's a futuristic we all know, because we've seen movies that came out in the 80s.
First impressions of this movie. I mean, have any of you seen the anime growing up?
No. In fact, I didn't even know that it came from an anime until after I watched the film earlier today.
No, I saw this actually like a few years back when it was on TV. But no, I didn't really, never really watched the show. Didn't have much of a connection to this. It just happened to be on TV one day and I picked it up. I regretted watching it then, and I equally regret watching it now.
Well, first impressions of our main character, Aeon, where the first things we see her do are catch a fly in her eyelashes and wear some sort of futuristic, fashionable beekeeper's helmet.
You know what? I'll grant that movies that are set sometime in the future try and have some kind of like unique take on fashion. Like, you see that in The Hunger Games, and really, really any movie that's set in the future that isn't, like, Equilibrium, where everyone is supposed to look exactly the same. But that outfit was just, that was the definition of, like, a non-visual, or a non-auditory groaner.
Yeah, she's got her head covered for safety when she's beekeeping, but she's showing just enough thigh to keep it sexy.
Of course, it's Charlize Theron. We do have to point out that the fan service in this movie is pretty gratuitous.
Oh, repulsive.
Yeah, I mean, once I realized this was an anime, I just kept on thinking about the scenes and the costumes that Charlize wears, thinking, like, is this an image, you know, from the cartoon? And have they tried to make it over with real people? And I feel like the answer is, a lot of times they do try.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
To do like a Watchmen thing, where, like, some scenes are, like, lifted right from...
Right.
You know, the source material.
Yeah, I'm sure some stuff was shot for shot redone.
And from what I've read, the fly in the eye is such an example. And if I can just go back to that for a second, because it kind of went downhill from here for me, because I really liked that scene. Like, it was a cool way to sort of have an opening credit and show the name of the movie, the name of the main character, and the main character doing her first action. And I'm always interested to see, what is the first action you see your main character do?
Yeah, I thought it was some kind of symbolism, maybe. Like, it's saying, oh, she's like a Venus flytrap. Because we know she's an assassin. I thought that maybe she was going to be this, like, super stealthy, like, no one expects her to be the assassin kind of person. No, because she's super awesome badass chick who is completely untouchable, and nothing and no one can hurt her or even step to her. And anyone who tries just gets mopped up very quickly. They might as well have cast Mila Jovovich in this role. And they might as well name this movie Ultraviolet.
I mean, the only time she's ever really, like, gets injured or beat up in a fight is either when she's completely grossly outnumbered or distracted for completely different reasons.
Well, we see her first action scene because she's given orders by Frances McDormand, who is wearing a carrot top wig.
Who appears
to her via food and drink?
You know what? There's a really weird French kissing scene in this movie, like in that where we introduce Frances McDormand.
Oh, it is disgusting.
Initially, I had no idea what the hell was going on, and I was like, oh, okay. So this is... Can we start the movie?
I couldn't figure out
what the hell that was for. And really, it's for fan service, but...
Well, it was I thought it was a little, trying to be a little visually creative, like Frances McDormand as this carrot-topped, fire-headed leader of whatever section Charlize Theron, Aeon Flux is in. She kind of only becomes available to you via your own mind, right? So, like, you have to go and talk to her inside your own head, which makes me wonder, like, does the physical Aeon Flux dressed in her beekeeper outfit, when she gets this pill, does she just stop walking and like her eyes all go? But anyway,
she's not a very good covert operative because she's
currently
parked in the middle of like middle of town, just kind of standing there listening to a message.
Yeah, just standing there and listening to and actually seeing and being physically in the presence of her, you know, her Fargo commander. Yeah.
But the other thing is, it's definitely not just in her mind, because there's definitely like communication back and forth. So it's like she eats a pill that rewires her system to communicate remotely or something.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Well, it's not just her mind. It's like her mind is the vehicle to get her to this place, even though her physical body may be doing something else. I mean, I'm not saying it's a system that makes sense, but that's sort of what they're showing us is that.
No, I get that, but like I don't know. Part of my it's a big recurring problem in this movie is that all of the sci-fi in this movie, all of the gadgets that they pull out are just complete assholes that don't actually have any like internal consistency.
Every technology thing that comes out, every gun or futuristic, cool-looking thing is really just a plot contrivance that they use to advance the story.
The monkey. Well, we'll get to some of the other stuff, but like the monkey feet thing.
We will get to those. You know, to kind of put a seal on this weird kissing scene. If you would have asked me before yesterday what the most egregious kiss in a movie was, I probably would have said Cruel Intentions. But now I'm going to go ahead and say Aeon Flux because it was so close up and, like, weird that it grossed me out, actually.
Yeah.
She goes on this covert stealth mission where she is dressed in all white, and she murders the shit out of everybody. Steven Seagal, neck snapping. Even Steven Seagal would probably be like, oh, man, come on. Dial it back a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, bare hands. I mean, she is zero
weapons. She also, at one point, Xenia onatops a dude, like, with her hips.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like a wrestling move. She flies off the wall and like grabs him with the legs and flips him over.
I mean,
I'm okay with our covert operative character being like a super badass, but like at least have them put up something of a challenge.
Well, I just want to point out that she's the least covert op that I've ever seen in a movie. I mean, she's doing like this midnight raid on the compound for her assignment, and she's wearing all white. I mean, she's sticking out terribly. That's true. Like all the soldiers, if you watch this, they all not only have huge guns and helmets and body armor, none of which Aeon Flux has. She's wearing like a cat suit. I mean, the fact that they couldn't see her coming and vaulting over the roof to kill them with her thighs.
Future. There's so many essential technologies that we have now that they don't have.
Yeah.
That existed in 2005 when this movie came out that they don't have. Like, I don't know, a lock.
Well, I think it's worth noting that the film takes place 400 years from, what, 2007?
Yeah.
Or something like that, so it's like 2040-something?
I think it's actually 2011 and it's supposed to take place in, like, 2411 or something.
Oh, yeah. 2011, it takes place. And they're not nearly as well off as you would think they are, considering what you learn later in one of the twists. The kind of technology that they have really doesn't jive with the fact that she's able to just break into everywhere that she goes, no problem.
Yeah.
Now, to tie in with my five across the eyes of why do I care, who gives a shit, what's going on, like, did you have any idea what she did when she broke into this complex? Because she lowers herself from the ceiling, almost Mission Impossible style, over the CGI pool of water that is showing things in the movie that happened 10 seconds ago?
Yeah.
What?
No, I think I got that.
That's supposed to be their surveillance system, but like, whereas now that would be handled with computers and screens, apparently they have water-based technology, which, again, is kind of cool, but mostly just retarded.
Well, you know, Frances McDormand in the vision of her brain tells Aeon Flux that basically in the future, the people who made this little world kind of run it, but everything's perfect unless you know what's really going on. You know what I mean? It's like one of those things. the regular people think it's awesome, but there are a few people who know what the real story is, and Frances McDormand is obviously one of them. So when she sends Aeon Flux off there, she is basically sending her to turn off the cameras. Like, if you could imagine, you know.
No, I get that. But, like, there's no reason why their surveillance system should be, like, shouldn't be, like, actual cameras and.
Because it's futuristic. I mean, in 400
years, it's
like.
Yeah, but a pool of water with random visions is not the most efficient way to do that.
No, it's not, but it is the most futuristic way to do it because you get rid of all the actual cameras and you just have drops of water, and it's kind of like, you know, so outlandish to be like, this could never happen now, so it must be the future.
This movie picks style over substance every single opportunity it has.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And that's one example. And we don't know this character yet. The first thing we really see her doing is just murdering the shit out of these nameless mooks.
Disposable people.
Though we get a glimpse of maybe some sort of humanity. We meet her sister very briefly, and they chat, even though they're chatting like weird. I don't know if this was the acting or the direction, but they're talking like we're supposed to get to know these people and feel something for them, but instead of acting like humans, they're talking like weird, like robots trying to act like humans. And then the sister, who is maybe one of the only likable characters we have in the whole movie, is like shot in the face 30 seconds later. Thanks for coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the sister is supposed to be. She's like a symbol of, you know, kind of everything that is still right with this world.
We find out this has all actually been a flashback, and we jump a year or so into the future.
We were talking about it being a flashback, and it does jump in a year into the future of when the main plot takes place, but I don't think the entire thing was supposed to be a flashback. Like, I think.
She wakes up. I thought this was like a dream thing.
But I think when she woke up at the beginning of the movie, it was supposed to be like a year ago from when the rest of the movie takes place. Like, that whole scene happens and then there's a time jump.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So we got narration text, voiceover narration, flashback. This movie is just hitting all of the info dumps. It's like info diarrhea at this point. Show don't tell does not exist in a world that chooses style over substance every time, and that blows my mind.
Yeah. Well, again, it's knowing what we know about the director, it's really not that surprising.
Well, Charlize Theron wakes up wearing very little clothing. We get more fan service here, and she is immediately sent on a mission. Again. Why do we care? What's going on? And she's sent to kill the president.
Or chairman or something. No, he's a chairman. Yeah. They call him the chairman. And he's like basically supposed to be this emperor scientist whose dynasty has like apparently saved everybody at the beginning and has just kind of been keeping things intact. It's basically Big Brother or like Father from Equilibrium or any other dystopian character like that. Except with a twist. Because we're pretty much immediately introduced to him, and it turns out he's not a complete piece of shit. There's a scene where they're talking, where essentially, like, the chairman, or the board of people who run this...
The Jedi Council?
The Jedi Council, basically. I was going to say, like, the board, but I guess that doesn't really work. Are discussing, like, the recent activities of this rebel group, and try to figure out what to do, and there's some back and forth, and you find out that while a few of the members are kind of assholes, the guy that she's being sent to kill is actually kind of like a nice guy and doesn't really want to start dropping the hammer.
Yeah, I don't know this actor's name, but his character's name is Goodchild, Trevor Goodchild. Yep. He looks like, picture if you will, Clive Owen just one day gave up and started wearing sweatpants everywhere. This is like 6 months into that, Clive Owen.
It was like B-Team Children of Men.
Well, oh, yeah. It's funny that you would mention that, because there's a plot point later that made us joke that this was a far future sequel to Children of Men. But
the movie kind of develops into a B-movie Children of Men, but we'll get there.
She sneaks in with her her monkey-footed sidekick. Does anyone remember this character's name? Because it's really kind of a weird name.
It was like Altheria.
Oh, Sithandra.
Yeah. It's Sithandra. And she's got, like, she's been modified so that she's got hands on her legs. they run across the like open garden area that's supposed to let them into this guy's stronghold.
Before we get to how absurd this whole thing right here is, can I just point out the fact that one of two black characters in this movie has gorilla feet?
Literal monkey feet?
Did no one stop for a second and think, maybe that's not okay to do?
Unfortunate implications.
Did anyone think when it came to this movie, period?
No. I think that's pretty safe to say.
All right, go on.
No.
Please tell them about the razor grass and the needle-shooting tree security.
Okay, so apparently this futuristic society that uses water-based surveillance technology, instead of employing a surveillance system with snipers and cameras and, you know, the stuff that you would expect from a futuristic society, uses plant-based weaponry in order to keep people out. So, among other things, they have giant, like, seed pods that shoot machine gun needles at people that try and invade their little garden area. The grass in some of the areas, but not all of them, turn into blades that stab people, which is really only a problem if you're stupid enough to have exposed monkey hands on the bottom of your legs. But
I think my favorite scene, or my favorite directorial choice, and this like maybe is more of an editing thing, is where Charlize Theron almost lands on the razor grass. She's like an eyelash away from it, but she does this sexy split thing to keep her from it. And then Sethandra helps her up and says, maybe we should stay off the grass. Cut to them walking on the grass.
Yep. Well, and the best part about that is when this happens, Sethandra has already gotten her feet stabbed.
Yes.
Like, we didn't really need to have that told to us twice.
No, they go from playing the ground is lava to just, walk wherever you want.
Which really just begs the question, if you can make part of your garden blade grass, why not make all of it blade grass?
Yeah, if you're such a high-security place, this is where the future president of this utopia lives. Razor grass for miles on every side.
Yeah. The razor grass is literally just wide enough that somebody sufficiently skilled would be able to jump across it. Or if you're wearing shoes.
It was basically a Mario level. They had to jump over pits.
I feel like
piranhas.
If I had boots on, I could walk over the razor grass.
Now I'm picturing this with those plants shooting fire instead of pellets.
They might as well have had that, because it was basically a video game level.
Yeah. The funny thing about that is there is actually a plant whose seeds can shoot... whose fruit can shoot seeds like at 75 miles an hour. Of course, it's in Australia, I think. But,
of course it's in Australia.
That's clearly not what they were thinking when they did this. They just thought, it would be cool if we had, like, plant-based weapons technology. That would be so awesome. And as we find out later, like, some of the guns that they use in this futuristic society also seem to use those plant pincers as ammo instead of good old bullets.
Yeah, it was another case where I was saying, and you guys seem to have understood this movie way better than I did, but it was another point where I was just saying, like, why is any of this happening? What is going on? And that continued for me when Aeon gets captured. She gets caught. She hesitates when she has the opportunity to kill Trevor Goodchild because they have this moment of connection where they seem to recognize each other. Following that, she's bludgeoned in a way that would cave in the skull of any normal, not future badass heroine.
She takes a spiked maul to the back of her head, and it just knocks her out.
Oh, full baseball swing, too.
Yeah.
But she wakes up, no blood, in a prison cell.
And this is just, like, the ongoing theme of her pulling out bullshit gadgets that aren't set up. She pulls out, like a chem detector kit out of her shoe and uses it to figure out that there's, like, weird chemicals inside the water they gave her. So she takes a sample of the water, but doesn't actually drink it. And then, like, whistles into a vent, and magic bowling ball, or ball bearings, roll over and blow her out of jail.
We were watching this together, and I said, what the fuck is going on?
Well,
you said that
she
dropped them.
Towards her target, she was throwing these little things that came out of her ring on her hand.
Yeah.
I really must have been way drunker than I remember when watching this movie.
You were pretty drunk.
I mean, they let you know without really letting you know. Like, she's throwing things, like proximity mines of some kind, like on the wall as she's walking into this, you know, compound to do her assassination. And she throws like half a dozen of these things and then proceeds to, you know, let her emotions, I guess, get the best of her, and she ends up in this cell. But these little guys are, I guess, whistle activated, and she starts whistling, and the things that she threw start to move, and it turns out that there are little tiny explosive devices that latch onto the wall where she is and blow her out of jail. It's a jailbreak, basically.
Which raises a whole bunch of other questions. Like, why the hell would she set this up ahead of time, unless she knew she was going to be captured? How the hell does whistle activation tell those ball bearings exactly where to go and what to blow up? And just and how the hell does her whistling carry through the vents all the way to where she was?
It's another case, like we said, of all of the technology.
Bullshit, you know, plot convenience.
Yeah, it's just, we need a way to move the plot along. Let's just make her have this. It's like a little kid playing, like, cops and robbers. I have a gun. I have a bigger gun. I have a laser gun. I have a gun that shoots bullets times infinity. It's basically that. She can pull anything she wants out of her mystery sci-fi bag of tricks, and it's completely applicable to the situation.
Oh, shit, the writers wrote us into a corner again. Let me pull something else out.
Yeah, I mean, a main character gets shot. How am I going to fix him? Oh, my skin is actually bandages. Like, what the fuck?
Well, no, I think she had, like, liquid skin patches, like, concealed under her.
No, it definitely was. But it's ridiculous seeing her basically peeling off her own skin and then slapping it onto open wounds.
So much of this would have been so much more acceptable if they had just set it up ahead of time. Like, show a suiting up scene where she puts on a bunch of gadgets.
No, instead the suiting up scene is her slowly pulling stockings over her thighs. That's the suiting up scene we get in Aeon Flux, folks.
I mean, her body is basically a living utility belt. Like, any sort of scenario where she might find herself, all she has to do is go back to that utility belt and she'll have the anti-whatever spray.
Yeah, if only
have the solution right there.
If only she got attacked by a shark, she could have pulled out that repellent anti-shark spray.
Repellent. Hit her bad copter.
So she breaks out, and during this, we get the first hint that Johnny Lee Miller, who plays Trevor Goodchild's brother and next in line for the throne, presidency,
kind of
leadership thing,
the chairmanship.
Yeah. Is looking to get him killed and actually fed this terrorist group the information of where he would be and how Aeon could get in and murder him. And he's not happy that the job wasn't done. Now, Johnny Lee Miller, I like this guy as an actor. But man, I feel like at a certain point, his resume was just depressing. Like, was he going into auditions and I was handing him, like, yep, well, I was in Hackers, Rennie Harlan's Mindhunters, and Aeon Flux. Like, is that what got him the Sherlock Holmes role? Was it one of these?
It's funny because in so many other movies, he's the friend who turns out to be a villain.
Oh, yeah. Every movie. Except Hackers, I guess.
Except Hackers.
And now he's the second best Sherlock Holmes on television.
Yeah.
But so we find out he's bad. We find out he's basically trying to take over the leadership of this utopia. But Flux, Flux escapes.
But at the same time, it's heavily, like, he even says it, and it's heavily implied that, like, he's not just doing this for the sake of power. He's actually got, like, some deeper motivation for it. But his, like, when he actually finally gets around to explaining his motivation for why he's backstabbing his own brother, It's got to be the most bullshit villain motivation I've ever heard.
Oh, it's terrible. I mean, should we just get into what the plot twist is now?
We might as well, honestly. Because we're going to have to tap dance around it otherwise
for
the next hour.
It's all, the whole movie is this kind of past life regression / cloning thing. Everyone has... no one can have children. That's part of the disease, which is why we reference Children of Men.
Yeah.
So they just keep cloning the same people over and over again, and it's implied that some of the memories carry over.
Right. Which makes no sense. There's no reason why if you've got somebody's DNA on a template, they should ever be able to remember anything. DNA does not work that way.
And I was even willing to buy this kind of magic, like, we retain some of our memories from our past life thing. That was fine. Okay. But there's a point where we see Trevor and Johnny Lee Miller basically raising and training the next generation of them as little kids while they're old men. And they keep implying that this is immortality, a way to live forever. But no, it's not.
No.
You die, and you just theoretically continue on. Like, it doesn't...
Yeah.
This is the thing that didn't make any sense to me. And please, if you guys understood this, fill me in.
No, it made as little sense. Not to reference an equally bad movie, but it's one of those things that the Sixth Day actually did right, where the characters can actually, like... They essentially have, like, a brain-uploading memory of everything, and they can kind of download it into the next body. There's nothing of that here. It's just, it's not immortality. It's a copy of you lives on.
Well, you know, when this is all revealed, you know, Aeon Flux is kind of shocked by the whole thing that she's just a copy of another woman, but the two main brothers seem to not only... be aware of this, but are like welcoming it as a way to stay alive, you know, forever. And the one brother says that they make a point of saying he's done it 7 times. So you just got to imagine 7 times over, there's a guy who looks like him telling a little kid, you know, what the secret is. And then the little kid just having to believe it and grow up and devote his life. So this is what really didn't make sense. Like, is this guy just always the chairman? Like, every 7 times that he's been a little kid growing up.
Yes, like, I think that's what they were
implying. He's gotten old and sick and died, and then there's just a little kid that knocks on the door. He's like, hey, I'm that guy as a little kid. I'm the new chairman now because it's still just me. And he told
me... Well, actually, that's another thing. Unless they want to, like... You'd think somebody at some point would notice that every member of this family looks exactly the same.
Yeah, how did no one figure out the terrible secret of not Utopia?
And that these people have been around forever. Like, when they reveal this big twist, it makes sense. Okay, so Aeon Flux has been around for 7 generations. But, like, that means that everybody has. Like, every, like, no-name woman on the street. Like, every faceless dude that's walking in this utopia zone has been someone else this whole time. Like, this entire population already lived. Seven generations over.
Yeah, the only guards.
You know what I mean? The guys who grew up being guards, like, oh, you're gonna go defend the chancellor. It's like, oh, my dad got killed by some crazy chick.
Well, and then I actually don't know about that because they imply that it's set up so that, like, each person doesn't have to fill the same role that they had in their past life. So, like, maybe you just kind of have, like, a normal life.
Yeah, except for the chancellor and his brother, who go back every single time and teach their young selves how to be their grown selves.
Oh, and the worst, and oh god, the worst, is when we find out that Aeon was a girl named Catherine, who was a lover of one of the iterations of Trevor. And they
not
had
only a lover,
memory.
She was
his wife.
Married to him.
Yeah, and so they had this vague memory of each other, which is why she hesitated in killing him. And the worst is when Trevor is explaining this to her, and he says, oh yeah, I just kept passing on the memory of you. I explained it. I told the story of you to each new generation, and that's why I'm falling in love with you. Like, what?
Yeah, no, how seriously, just get out and... get out and date somebody.
Like, that is the worst explanation. That is the worst, like, pickup line I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Like, well, I just taught future me to love you.
Yeah.
God damn it. That's the worst.
Just the worst.
It is.
Yeah, it turns into, like, a weird love story at this point, you know?
Yeah, and there's a great scene where she tries to go kill him again. She magically knows where his hidden kind of safe house is. She goes to kill him again, and instead of fighting, they fuck. And a part that made me laugh out loud was she then wakes up completely naked, and Trevor, like, puts a hand on her, like, lovingly, and she just strangles him. Just full
she chokes
on,
him out.
Sits on him and strangles him. And now, look, I love it when a girl does that to me, but it was just
well, she obviously had a flashback, and she remembered exactly what gets him off.
This is where, yeah, this is where you started paying attention to the movie again.
Right, yeah. I mean, I was fully erect at this point. And then the fight right after this finished me off. We get to see Aeon discovers a really poorly hidden secret trapdoor where she goes down into a library, but then finds another alien magic happy Christmas time machine that allows her to jump into a parallel universe, different time, other dimension.
It's a teleporter? No, I think it's just a teleporter from like one room to the other for no discernible reason. Because as we later find out, the other room also just has a door.
Yeah, other people can find the room if they know where to look, but Charlize Theron has to teleport there.
Go figure.
Whatever. And there's a fight between Trevor's bodyguard and Aeon that I actually thought was pretty cool because they keep jumping between the two different rooms. Though they could have done more with it, I did think it was a pretty well-shot, well-choreographed fight scene.
Yeah.
Though
well, not only different rooms, I think they're like in different realities.
That's
like
what I
this
thought.
Weird thing that latches onto her chest, like
that
brings her into
Lovecraft.
Another realm.
It had a kind of a Cthulhu thing going for it with all the
like
because it's like tentacles wrapping around her chest. And I was like, okay, this is definitely inspired by an anime.
But then when the
but then it's got like test tubes and it's like very sciencey, like the realm that she goes into. Even so much as to one point she's fighting the guy and then she like smashes his head against all these test tubes when they go into the other realm.
But I really feel like this was just this guy being like rich and having technology and being a lazy bastard. And like his lab is down the hallway, but he just doesn't feel like walking there from his bedroom every day.
Yeah, it's got to be because the sweeper squad destroys all of his research later on. And I assume they don't do it by using the teleporter device.
Because they'd have to do it one at a time.
Right.
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
See, I was worried at first when I was saying this didn't make sense, and you guys were like, no, it clearly made sense, blah, blah,
this
blah.
This thing progressively made less sense.
Yeah, they set up a whole scenario that they tried to continue with, but I think, as we've touched on earlier, it really does degenerate into, does this look cool? And then, like, as long as it looks cool, it doesn't have to jive with anything that we've seen. So here we get, like, the trans-dimensional fight scene. Or maybe it is just a room down the hallway. And he just is, like, when he has to go to the bathroom, the bathroom's really far away from his lab. Like, the men's room is so far, so he built a thing that he could wear it and be instantly transported to the men's room when he's working late at night. And then Aeon Flux comes in and just hijacks it.
Yeah. See, you know, that gives me a new perspective on this. Maybe that hidden room wasn't really a hidden room. That was just, like, the doorway down to his library right next to his bathroom. Because, I mean,
man,
honestly,
think about
who
it.
Doesn't read on the toilet?
I mean, it's the future, but people are still going to be lazy. And if they have futuristic technology, you know, maybe this guy, that was, like, the best thing about his job, and now this chick is in here beating the shit out of him, and he doesn't know what he did wrong.
Yeah. There's a cut after they make out, and she chokes him out, to the council that's now being headed by the evil brother, like, watching the footage of this. And this guy has literally just watched his brother bang somebody.
Oh, yeah, they were all getting off on
this. I don't care how much power you want. That's nothing no one ever wants to have to watch.
No, they were all into it.
God.
Well, we find out now that Aeon is not only wanted by the government, but now Frances McDormand, as the leader of this terrorist cell, is sending her people to get Aeon Flux because they believe that she has betrayed them. So now everyone's after her. There's a fight scene between Aeon and Sithandra that... Did anyone else get, like, a little... how do I say this without sounding really gross? But there was, like, some undertones to that fight scene between Sithandra and Aeon,
well,
right?
She even makes comments about it, I think, at one point.
She
towards the end. She gets
Flux
tied
wins.
Up, and she's like, Oh, it's been a while since you've done that.
Yeah, she wins the fight and then goes, "We used to have fun doing this," or something really weird like that.
I think that was exactly what she said, as she's like grabbing random things to like tie up her friend with. That yeah. This used to be fun for them, but now I'm going to leave you half drowning in a pond.
Yeah, that's another thing. She clearly never got medical attention for the holes in her feet, and she's just like, after their fight, she gets left in a pond. She's pretty much guaranteed to have like gangrene or something.
Oh yeah, those hand feet are getting amputated.
It's a good thing they could put new ones on, I guess.
So, and now at this point, Frances McDormand sends some assassins, and thanks for coming, Frances McDormand. That's the end of your character. Nothing is wrapped up with this.
She's shown on screen towards the end of the movie, but I don't think she actually says anything.
No, she's pretty much just gone. Yeah. I mean, they set her up almost as a villain. You get this idea the whole time that she is using Flux for her own agenda, but they never really explore that at all.
No, because you never know like where Frances McDormand comes from.
If she's
you don't
real.
Know if she's being backed by somebody or how she even has the technology to give people pills to get into their brains. That never really comes up.
You know what? One more thing that irritated me about this. So the first inkling that the evil brother has of who she is when they're watching the video of their makeout scene. And they're in a futuristic society that has, like, hyper-advanced surveillance. Neither of them figured out that this, like, long-lost lover of of Trevor Goodchild has been running around in the city for, like, at least 20 years?
At least, like, four generations, seems like.
Well, no, they specifically state that, like, this is the first time she's been resurrected.
Oh, okay, I missed that. Is that when they
right
go into the Overlord?
With poor Pete Postlewaite.
Yeah, let's get into that. D, explain how we spawn more Overlords with Peter Postlewaite.
So, right at the beginning, during some of the establishing shots of the city, we see this, like... Yeah, it basically looks like a StarCraft Overlord hovering over the city. You're told that this is supposed to be some sort of, like, symbol of the current government that, like, is just supposed to be up there, and it's like, okay, yeah, Big Brother's watching you. And eventually, at one point, Aeon makes it up into there, and it turns out it's basically, like, their cloning database of DNA for everybody that they use to clone everybody. And this just brings up a lot of questions of why this thing still exists. If there's a terrorist group that's actively trying to bring this government down, and this is supposed to be a big symbol of the government, you'd think that you'd keep your DNA repository, like, 500 feet down in a bunker.
It's flying around the edge of their, you know, kind of like a fortified zone is sort of like a memorial to everyone that they've lost. But then it turns out you can get into this memorial.
Yeah.
If you're Aeon Flux and you're able to, like, latch on to the little, like, jellyfish tentacles that are flying around and climb up into the jellyfish body, and then there's going to be an old man in there who's, like, happy as hell to see you, and he's wearing a burrito, and he's bald.
Now, this kind of makes me think that maybe that device was a teleporter, because Goodchild's able to get on and off of that in seconds. There's a point where he's not on it, then he's on it, and then he's off it, all in the span of, like, what seems like in movie time, about 15 minutes. But every time
I just chalked that up to bullshit plot contrivance.
Well, yes, probably it was that. But every time Charlize needs to get on it, she has to do some sort of daredevil acrobat CGI stunt to get on or off. Mm. Now, poor late Peter Postle... How the fuck do you say his last name?
Pete Postlewaith.
Poor late Pete Postlewaith. Dee and I had this moment when we were watching this, like this Raul Julia moment, where we just hoped this wasn't the movie that killed him, because we didn't know how long ago it was that he died. But don't worry, fans of the late character actor Pete Postlewaith, this was not the movie that killed him. So his actual character, I guess, is he controls the DNA
that passes basically... on.
He's basically God. He's basically Overlord Space Jesus.
Yeah. Basically, he's kind of set up as this, like, caretaker, who I guess also trains his replacement constantly, though that's never really shown, because they probably didn't want to have, like, a young Pete Postlewaite stand-in. He's sort of like the half-scientist, half, like, guru that's up there deciding where the DNA goes and who gets reborn, basically, whenever somebody dies.
And that's how we find out that Aeon's sister has been reborn, where we get a scene where Aeon busts into a young couple's house with guns drawn and then almost kidnaps their baby, who's her reborn sister?
Yeah.
And Charlize, to be fair to her, even though her acting is weird and stilted at the beginning of the movie, Charlize Theron is really good with emotional scenes. I do think she's a great actress. I like her in a lot of things, though she's done a lot of trash, too. I mean, Monster is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, anything like that, any of those movies, she's great in. And anytime she has to show some emotion in this movie, she does make it seem real, despite the fact everyone in this future is a weird robot person, pretty much, emotionally.
Her acting is good on the level of this movie. Like, it's probably the best acting in this movie. You can tell there's a few parts where she's just like, I just got nothing to work with.
Oh, yeah. It's the episode, it's the Star Wars prequel.
Oh, yeah. Disease, where you waste a whole bunch of great actors.
Yeah, you've got great actors acting against a green screen saying bullshit dialogue, and no one can put anything together.
It's unfortunately the Hobbit problem, too. You've got Ian McKellen, who's essentially talking to a bunch of cardboard cutouts, because they had to film all of his scenes separately from everybody else.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he actually claims to have broken... it's an aside, but he claims to have broken down and cried during one of the scenes. Because he was literally on set, and it was just the director and him, and all the technical people, and there's no other actors for most of his scenes. Because of the height difference.
That is the saddest thing I think I've ever heard.
I know!
They were able to, like, take care of that in the original trilogy. It's a shame they couldn't do it again.
Well, in the original trilogy, it was mitigated somewhat because of the fact that so many of the scenes are shared by, like, normal height people. So, like, you could have, you know, Viggo Mortensen and Ian McKellen in a scene, but when it's all hobbits and all dwarves, you can't really do that. It's definitely one of the saddest things I've ever heard about movie making.
I've got a question, a hypothetical, about this world where you can clone yourself over and over again. Now, we know that the good children, were scientists as well as leaders of this world. So they keep cloning themselves so they can try to find a cure for this disease. Do you think that, you know, like when you make a copy of a photocopy, it kind of comes out wrong? Do you think like maybe like every fourth one comes out wrong, and like one of them has a learning disability, one of them's blind, and they're just like, well, cancer's not getting cured this generation, here's to another 70 years of famine.
I mean, you know, Michael Keaton already addressed that issue in the classic comedy Multiplicity.
Stay tuned.
The first
for that
time you make a clone of a clone, he has severe learning disabilities and likes pizza a lot.
It's this is the horrible. First time I've thought of the movie Multiplicity.
Go
in 15 years.
It's a good movie.
You almost said that with a straight face.
I would rather watch Multiplicity than Aeon Flux again.
Well, yeah.
Hands down. I you know.
So where the hell are we in this movie? What's going on at this point in the movie? Are we at the climax already?
I think we skipped over a bunch of stuff, but we're basically at the climax of this movie. Because then there's a bunch of bullshit chase scenes and fight scenes, and they get chased around and eventually... Actually, I don't know. They get chased around, and then they eventually escape.
Yeah, Johnny Lee Miller convinces the army that his brother's a traitor.
Yeah, because apparently that's how it works.
Yep.
And you know what? That's another thing that bothers me. So he's been declared like an outlaw, and they're actually actively chasing him down, trying to kill him. Why isn't the resistance now going after the new person in charge? Like, why are they still going after this deposed leader who's going to be shot on sight the second they find him? Are they just, like, dumb? And we're like, okay, well, since you did all these bad things, we're still going to kill you.
Yeah, I mean, when the brother who's next in line puts a kill-on-sight order out for the leader of your utopia, like, does no one stop for a second and go, yeah? Is that okay? Shouldn't we talk about this?
Apparently not.
But no, they just try to murder them.
Clearly the best solution.
And there's a shootout in a garden that I think was maybe supposed to mirror the lobby fight in The Matrix, where instead of blowing up concrete, like...
cinder blocks?
Yeah, where instead of blowing up, like, the concrete structures, they're blowing up catwalks, and shrapnel is flying everywhere, and they're falling down, and it's just so much explosion and CGI bullshit that you get really numb to all of the action in the movie.
Yeah, well, and not just that.
Feels
like
it matters.
She sets up a bunch of more bullshit plot contrivance weaponry that helps her win the day, and all of a sudden, the sniper rifle wielding people that we should have seen in the scene where they tried to break into this facility in the first place are suddenly present,
and they can't hit anything.
They can't. Well, of course, they went to the same marksmanship academy as the stormtroopers.
Yes. Well, have you ever played a first-person shooter? If you try to go close range with a sniper rifle, it doesn't work.
Been there, done that.
But yeah, I think this pretty much brings us to the climactic fight where they all meet in a park and then people get shot and Aeon actually does almost nothing.
Yeah, actually, you're right. She doesn't really do anything in this scene. She mostly just runs away.
Yeah,
it's her buddies that suddenly like decide to help her out over Frances McDormand's protests that actually do most of the blood work.
The terrorist group all are perched in different positions with sniper rifles, and Johnny Lee Miller has brought a bunch of guards, and it's Aeon Flux and Trevor Goodchild, and Trevor and his brother are talking. The snipers are about to shoot everybody, pretty much. Well, I guess really just Aeon and Trevor. And then they teleport back to the Frances McDormand carrot top layer. Did they set up this communicator before?
Yeah, the one that's in her spine?
Yeah,
they never actually set that up.
They have spine teleporters, I guess.
It's not a teleporter, though. It's like a communicator.
Like psychic connection thing?
Yeah, I honestly don't know. It's baffling, just like everything else in this movie.
They were sitting in the screenwriter's room going, oh man, we really need Sethandra and Aeon to discuss whether or not Sethandra should murder her. How can we do that when they're 1,000 yards away? Why don't we just give them a...
No, that's a dumb idea. Yeah, we can't do that in the future.
Why don't we just give them a telepathy? No, it's got to be more... how about a communicator in their spines? Yes, that is the one we will pick. I mean, maybe this all makes sense in the anime.
But I don't think a lot of this stuff doesn't actually carry over from the anime.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I know the cloning thing is actually heavily implied in the anime, because she like dies in every other episode. But... other than that, I really don't know how many liberties they took.
I wonder if this is just...
Well, the easy answer to that is a lot of liberties.
Yeah. I wonder if this is just Aeon Flux in name only, much like World War Z is really nothing like what the book is at all.
Yeah.
Maybe this director or Charlize Theron or Johnny Lee Miller was a huge Aeon Flux fan. They were like, yes. You know, if anyone, I would put my money on Johnny Lee Miller since he was in Hackers. I feel like... That whole like late night MTV thing.
This is a passion project for Johnny Lee Miller.
I feel like the whole late night MTV thing was totally right up his alley. 1993, yep. Coming off of Hackers.
He was watching this while reading up on Righteous Hacking.
Yeah, he's got the rights to the Celebrity Deathmatch movie in his back pocket. He's just waiting for the right time.
So, we learn all of that, and that the brother was there, and he wants more clones, but he never wanted Charlize Theron to be a clone. He likes living forever, even though we previously discussed that it doesn't really make sense that he can live forever. He's just seven times a little kid growing up. But he dies, so it doesn't matter. Because as soon as he dies, and he doesn't just die, he's killed. It's not like he has a brain aneurysm on sight. I mean, they kill him. And once he's killed, we're made to believe that it's going to be a bright, sun-shining day from here on out, and that pregnant women will be allowed to have kids, and that everyone who's alive is cool with eventually dying, which really doesn't make sense to me because it's not fair. I guess it makes sense, but it's not fair. Just because Aeon Flux is the main character, they didn't take a poll. They didn't get a consensus if all the people in this city enjoy being clones. Just because she doesn't like being a clone... she's willing to throw this guy's whole plan down the shitter. And I can't help but wonder if maybe you know, the bad brother is not really such a bad guy.
Well, the other stupid thing about his plot, if he really wanted to live forever and be, well, even though he's not actually living forever, if he wanted his, like, selves to be in charge forever, he didn't need to get rid of pregnant people. All he had to do was let that happen off his own brother for having a conscience and keep cloning himself. Get rid of the cloning program if you have to, but there's no reason why he can't just be in charge all the time.
Because if he just cloned himself forever, then he would always technically be in charge, like you're saying. So the whole vendetta against women that are naturally pregnant for the first time in 400 years is kind of misplaced.
Yeah.
But because he's murdering these women because they're pregnant. We find out that the reason that Charlize's, or Aeon Flux's sister Flux, is killed is because she was carrying a baby. And so she was no longer allowed to live.
So at this point, shouldn't we see two, like, baby Goodchild's brothers running around?
Well, you would think so, because they said
they should already be training their replacements.
Especially because the age that they are when they go and talk to their clone selves is, like, the exact same age that they are in this movie. It's not like they applied, you know, some sort of, like, makeup to them and special effects to make them look older. It's not like they're two old men walking around talking to these little kids, which if you think about it this way, would have been a much cooler reveal. Like, imagine, if you will, in an alternate Aeon Flux movie where there are these, like, two old men walking around talking to kids and, like, teaching groups of, or not a group, but I guess just two children. And then at the end of the movie, you find out that these old men are really the two brothers old. And it's like a different version of their clones, because they never really say what happens to the older clones. It's like, oh, we teach the young clones how to be us. And then what? You live for 50 years?
No, they're turned into Soylent Green.
Yeah, well, Soylent Green is people.
Nothing about the
If you haven't seen a 35-year-old movie by now, spoilers are well overdue.
Nothing about the reveal really works. Nothing about this closing scene really works. The snipers decide that they'll side with Aeon again. They shoot all of the bad guys while getting shot themselves.
Conveniently.
Trevor's brother pulls a rocket launcher out of his butt, almost literally, because he doesn't have it, and then he has it. And he shoots Sithandra, which... And this got a pretty big laugh out of us. He shoots Sithandra with a rocket launcher, and then it shows this comedic, like, CGI close-up of her. Not her body looks untouched. There's no burns on it. There's no blood. But she just goes flipping through the air, comedically, head over heels, spiraling down to the ground, as, like, Charlize Theron has to pretend to put on this shocked face.
Yeah. She's not burned in the slightest. It's almost like a complete... Even though it's clearly a direct hit in the shot, it's almost like it, like, missed her and she got startled and fell.
It's comedic. If Daffy Duck did that hilarious to Bugs Bunny, it wouldn't be out of place.
No.
She has to turn her duck bill around when she lands. But it's, and then Trevor dies and all of the soldiers die.
No, the other guy dies.
Oh, yeah, Johnny Lee Miller dies, not Trevor. And Aeon does very little. I think she just puts the final bullet in him while the snipers did all the work. And that's pretty much the movie. They decide they have one more thing to do. They decide they have to stop the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
So they go up into the Overlord. Peter Postlethwaite is just like, yeah, all right. He says, I've been waiting, like, seven generations to die.
Well, he says he's been waiting for 400 years, and he's tired. And it's like, okay, I can kind of get that you're 70 and tired, but you've only been waiting about 70 years.
Yeah, you've
died
seven times.
It's not like you've got all of your past memories.
Right, exactly.
I hate this plot twist so much.
They're sloppy. That's the problem, is that, like, you know, we're led to think that these plot twists mean something, you know, because of this society. And if you, like we're doing, if you really break it down and think about what it would be like to live there and be there, it doesn't really pan out.
Yeah, no, definitely.
But
not.
Just don't think that much. Like, just that's my hint. Like, that's my tip. If you watch Aeon Flux, just don't think that much. And, you know, just enjoy, like, Lady Matrix with a little plot twist, and that's pretty much it.
Or just don't watch Aeon Flux.
Yeah, just don't watch Aeon Flux.
This was the first movie I was going to say, like, maybe Flix, too. Because I can't say if it's Netflix or not Flix.
It's a binary thing.
It's like maybe Flix. Like, don't maybe don't watch it on Netflix, but if you're ever, like, up really late and you're, like, coming in from the bar and you're kind of buzzed and you're tired, but you're not tired enough for bed, and it's, like, 2:45 in the morning, and, like, FX is showing Aeon Flux. Like, if it's in the, like, the last 40 minutes, just watch it.
You know, that's the best possible recommendation I could ever hope to give this movie, is this is the perfect movie to pass out and puke on yourself to.
Yeah. If you're going to fall asleep on the couch with your shoes on, watch Aeon Flux.
You're already not going to remember what happened the night before. You might as well roll the dice.
I'm going to go to sleep tonight and forget all of this. So just watch Aeon Flux without brushing your teeth and keep your clothes on while you fall asleep.
Yeah, you'll probably be drunk enough to not realize how kind of gross and skeevy and male-gazy the fan service shots of Charlize Theron are. So you'll be laying on the couch and be like, oh, that's nice, that's hot, and then you'll fall asleep and forget the movie ever existed. It'll be a nice right. little thing to pass out to.
And as you're drifting off and you're watching these sexy shots, just think to yourself, it could have been Michelle Rodriguez.
Though, to be fair, about maybe 10% of you will not actually pass out, go to the fridge to get something before you fall asleep, and have a moment of horrific realization of what you just watched.
Yeah.
And that's all I have to say about that.
Well, I guess that covers Netflix or Notflix for Aeon Flux.
That was the most complicated Netflix or Notflix we've ever done. Yeah.
Pee-pee poo-poo bad movie. All right, well... all right, that was Aeon Flux. Not a very good movie. I do, before we go, I want to give a shout-out to, I don't know if I should call her a fan, maybe that's too presumptuous for us, but Amy, who listens to our podcast quite a bit, she gave us, I was talking to her, and she had some good things to say about our Teaching Miss Tingle episode. But one thing she did say was that Netflix or Notflix worked in reverse, because she wanted to go watch the movie after we unanimously recommended to never see this movie.
That's not how it's supposed to work.
But I think
yeah,
it makes
you're,
sense.
You're supposed to take it on face value.
We
like,
failed
if you,
you
say it's no good.
We're so sorry that we failed you.
It's like, I don't think you get how this works.
Yeah, you know what? But it's the kind of thing where it's like the train wreck. When someone says you shouldn't do this, I mean, you got to do it.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
A unanimous four no's is almost as good.
Should we just start, like, ironically flipping our recommendations around now just to mess with people?
I feel like a unanimous four Notflixes is almost as much of a recommendation as a unanimous four Netflixes.
That's
yeah,
true.
Definitely. It's very clear. But that's okay. You know what? If you, who knows? You got some time to kill? Just put it on. There's worse movies out there, but, like, really... If this movie doesn't find you, like, you're doing something wrong. Like, if you yeah. have to seek this movie out, you should maybe rethink, you know, what you're not watching that is going to be way better. Like, go ahead and just like, this is how I felt about, like, some of these movies we've been doing lately is, like, you know, yeah, you know, go see them. But, like, really, you could be better off just watching anything else and you'd be yeah. good to go. So, you know, watch Aeon Flux, don't watch Aeon Flux. You're not missing out on much. But if you want to see a thing you never saw before, go watch Charlize Theron catch a fly with her eyelashes, because I've never seen that before. So
I guess,
it's got that going.
I guess that's a good way to bring this full circle for me, at least. If you were to ask me, should I watch Aeon Flux, I would say, I don't give a shit. I don't care. So, there you go. Aeon Flux. If you want to get in touch with us, at Netflix Martyrs on Twitter, Netflix Martyrs on Facebook, you can like us, spread the link around to your friends who also hate good things. You can email us if you have any comments or criticism or requests, netflixmartyrs@gmail.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave a nice review if you want, or if you don't want to leave a nice review, review something else and give it 5 stars, but just do it under our name. Any last words?
Yeah, and
words?
If you see us on Facebook and you enjoy what we do, you know, reach out to us, because we're always looking. We're always looking to do something fun. So yeah, let definitely. Us know.
We'd love to interact with our four listeners more. Post something. Tell us.
Yeah, like maybe one of you guys might want to be on the show one day, all four of you. So, you know, just play your cards right, and maybe Chris will look at you a special way one week.
Wait, what? What are we talking about?
We're talking about how I'm going to sleep with all of our listeners.
That's not really fan appreciation right there.